Turn to John chapter 17. John 17, we will get there here in just a minute. You know, I went about 4 weeks in a row without telling a joke, and Rhonda Riggs said, "You don't tell a joke anymore. I liked your joke." So you can blame her if you don't like my joke. All right. So, no, it's good. It's good having. We've got visitors here this morning. It's really good to have you guys all here today. We're glad to have Tony here. And Scott, Terry, and Caleb. Did I get it?
Yes.
All right. I'm working on that one. They're from Ramona, and they came to see the Joneses, and the Joneses just disappeared. So you guys be sure and make them feel at home. It's great to have Lauren and Holly and Sheridan back here. She's been here probably a few times. So you're not a visitor any longer. But anyway, it's good to have everybody here. I wanted to introduce Craig Wooten. Craig works at the United States Postal Service. His favorite hobbies are fish and hunting, and he loves to chase storms. So you have to ask him those questions. But Craig placed membership with us on Wednesday night, and so we want to welcome you this morning. He's a good guy, so be sure and meet him. We got food a little bit later today, and that's always a draw, but we have some spiritual food right now, and so we want to share that with you. The story goes like this. There's a farmer lived on a very isolated highway. There was some construction going on a little bit further down the road, and so cars started coming by, and he was getting frustrated because he had a lot of chickens and roosters, and people were running over his chickens. And so he called the sheriff, and he said, "Hey, look, you got to get these cars to slow down. Everybody's just speeding by. Nobody even cares, and they're running over my chickens." So the sheriff says, "Well, I got that covered." So he sends out some county workers, and they put up a sign, and it says, "Slow, animal crossing." Did nothing. Cars just kept coming, kept running over his chickens. So he called him again after a couple days. He goes, "Didn't do a thing." He goes, "I got this covered." So he sends out another truck. And this time, the county workers come out and they put "slow, children crossing." Didn't do a thing. Cars just keep going, keep running over his chickens. So he calls him again. And this time he puts up "slow, school zone." Nothing. The people just keep going. So he calls and he calls and he calls and he calls. And the sheriff's getting frustrated. He's getting frustrated. He says, "Let me ask you a question. Can I put up my own sign?" Sheriff thinks to himself, "Well, nothing can go wrong with that deal." So he says, "Yeah, go ahead. Put up your own sign." And so he doesn't hear from the farmer for about 2 weeks. So he finally thinks, "Well, I'm going to call and see, you know, how things are going." He calls the farmer, and the farmer goes, "It's great. No problem. I'm working really hard right now, but I haven't lost a chicken. Cars are slowing down. No big deal." And just hangs up. And he's like, "Oh, I wanted to ask him what kind of sign." So he thought, "Well, I'll just drive out there." So the sheriff drives out, and on the side of the road is this 4-foot by 8-foot piece of plywood, right? Spray painted in huge yellow letters, "Slow, nudist colony," right? Got him to slow down, right? People want to see that. No, I'm just kidding. But the question is, this morning, what will it take for you to slow down? What kind of sign does God have to put up in your life to make you slow down, to make you stop, to make you think, to make you spend time with Him? You know, I left these little posters up because we're in a series of lessons called Overcoming Overload. And last week we talked about the Sabbath and the importance of the Sabbath. And within this, we talked about space. You know, it's hard to read sentences without spaces in them, without commas, without periods. And we talked about, you know, rests in songs are important. You know, it's really hard to keep singing a song without going, you know, and taking a breath. But we talked about the importance of Sabbath. Today, I want to talk about sanctuary. When you talk about sanctuary, you sometimes think of this word solitary confinement. Right? Does that have a positive or a negative connotation for you? Kind of negative, right? Because when we think of solitary confinement, we think of prison or maybe a prisoner of war camp, and that kind of bugs us a little bit. It's like, I don't want solitary confinement. But the idea of solitary confinement is to exclude whoever it is in solitary confinement from everyone else. And it's a biblical concept. It's a great concept, but it's also something that you should be doing on your own. Where do you go to unwind? Where do you go to find rest? I mean, maybe an ocean, a secluded beach. You know, Karen and I just got back from Mexico. Colby's doing this, you know. Craig, there's your fishing buddy right here. A kid will fish all day. He likes to go fish, right? Anybody else? Any other fishermen in here? We got some fishermen in here that love to get. You go to some people mountains, some people forests, right? Everybody's kind of got their spot where they like to go. But you don't have to go really far away, you know, to find your secret place. You can look under the stairway in a church building and cut a hole in the wall. You can do that. But it is creepy. Yeah, the guy under the stairs. It's interesting to me that we oftentimes do not have a place like that. I mean, some people get in their car and just go drive. Other people, maybe they go to a scenic overlook. Maybe you do that at night. Karen has this infatuation with the moon, you know, and the stars. And we love that. I mean, laying in a hammock, you know, and just a slow little swing back and forth and look up into the stars. You've got to have those moments in your life. It's called sanctuary. It's a place of refuge. It's a place of protection from the world. A place to clear your mind, to think, no human distractions, no media, no cell phone, none of those kinds of things. Turn, look at this passage in John 17. It's interesting what Jesus says here and gives us this idea of sanctuary. He really does. Some people say, you know, Matthew chapter 6, the Lord's Prayer, you know, is found there. But, you know, here's 26 verses of Jesus praying for his disciples, praying for us. I think that's the true Lord's Prayer is found here in John 17. But look at verses 15 through 18. Okay? Jesus says this, "My prayer is not that you take them out of the world." That's not my prayer for the disciples, for his apostles, for us. He says, "I don't want you to take them out of the world, but that you protect them from the evil one." So the protection is what Jesus is praying for. "They are not of the world, even as I'm not of it. Sanctify them." We talked about this word sanctify last week. Separate, set apart for a purpose. I want you to set them apart for a purpose by the truth. That's how you'll do that, is give them truth. "Your word is truth. As you sent me into the world, I have sent them into the world." So like Jesus was in the world, we're in the world. Like Jesus was doing his ministry, Jesus was a busy guy, was he not? Jesus had a mission. Jesus had a purpose. Jesus was doing life together with his apostles and with his disciples. He was doing all of those things, and yet he also figured out it was really important to get out of the world, to find a solitary place, to find a sanctuary, to find a place where it was just him and God, and he could not only speak with his Father, but listen to what his Father was telling him as well. Our lives should be characterized by regular, purposeful withdrawal from the world, to a desert place, a beachy place, a secret place, wherever you want to go to find your sanctuary. I think it's very scriptural. And let me tell you what I'm not talking about. I think this is important to, you know, when you say, "Oh, here's what I'm telling you," but to also say, "This is what I'm not saying." I'm not saying, you know, that you go to a family get together, that you go hang out with your whole family. That's not the sanctuary that I'm talking about. Okay? Not what I think biblically what God is trying to help us understand. It's not a church worship service. Again, we talk about sometimes, "Oh, they're in the sanctuary," you know, because there's people here. And there's other things going on here. It's a different type of thing. Not a camp, not a retreat. You know, it's oftentimes we say, "Hey, let's go to a retreat. We'll retreat from the world." And then it's full of so many activities, we don't even have time to think. And so we get home and take a retreat from the retreat, right? Especially if you're in charge of the retreat, kind of a deal. It's not going with close Christian friends in a small group, none of those things. It's a secret place. It's a place where just you and God can go hang out one-on-one. You find a place, a secret place, a place where you know that you can spend time walking in the cool of the day with the Father, spending time just with Him. And you do it purposefully so that you can slow down a little bit and pay attention to the things God has for you. Austin Phelps wrote a book called The Still Hour. And in it, he observed this. He said, "It has been said that no great work in literature or in science was ever wrought by a man or woman who did not love solitude. We may lay it down as an elemental principle of religion, but," he said, "no large growth in holiness was ever gained by one who did not take time to be often alone with God." And so in this book that he writes, he's saying to us, you know, holiness and relationship needs to have one-on-one. How many of you guys that are married like that one-on-one romantic dinner? You know, maybe you have the candlelight, you have that. Yes, right? Immediately, I like that. You know, you want that one-on-one relationship time. It's romantic, it's important. It's a growth in your relationship. You young ones who didn't raise your hand, handle that, JR. Tonight, 7 o'clock tonight. What are y'all doing at 7 o'clock tonight? Having a candlelight dinner. That's what you're doing, all right? So, there you go, Kristen. You can thank me later, all right? But those moments are important. Those moments are important. We get that. We need to, I mean, those of you that have raised your kids and now they're gone, those of you have kids at home, you know, I know, I'm looking behind you too. You still have some, but, you know, Christina and Luke are, you know, you're in that moment of life where it's like, you know, find those grandparents. Call us. Seriously, call Karen and I and say, we need a time, okay? And we'll come relieve you. Take those moments. They're really, really important. Key thought. I highlight my own, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen my notes. My notes are kind of silly, but they're good for me. But I highlight my own stuff, and anything in green means you better say that. If you lose your spot, no matter what, say the stuff in green. So here's the green, all right? On the surface, it seems like an idea that's totally contrary to our 24/7 fast-paced lifestyle. It is. Okay, but here's the key thought. When is anything that God has said walking hand in hand with what the world teaches us? I mean, if it's contrary to what our culture teaches, if it's contrary to this 24/7 mentality, it's probably Christ-like. It's probably biblical. Not always, but that's the key idea is yeah, it goes against our culture. It goes against our mindset because we want to keep going and going and going and going and going. But sanctuary provides power for our lives. You say, I don't have time to slow down. Yes, you do. It's just like the guy that has to sharpen his axe before he chops down trees. Eventually, you got to stop and sharpen your axe. Just like your cell phones. I got my cell phone this morning. You know what? It doesn't last 3 or 4 days in a row. It doesn't last a week. What do you have to do to it? Charge it, right? You got to plug it back in. You got to recharge it so that you can keep going and use it the way that's what sanctuary is in our lives. I mean, it's a simple illustration, but we need to recharge our batteries, our spiritual batteries, and find this sanctuary. So sanctuary has 3 main characteristics. Of course it does, because there's 3 points in my lessons, right? 3 main characteristics in a sanctuary. You have solitude, silence, and stillness. So let's talk a little bit about solitude. Jesus demonstrates solitude over and over for us. Look at Matthew chapter 14, 22 and 23. All right? Now, what's just taken place? Jesus has just fed 5,000 men, children, and wives and females weren't counted. 5,000 men, right? Crazy stuff. Preaches, goes 100 miles an hour, got all of these crowds. Man, we got momentum now. We've got all these crowds and the apostles are probably fired up. Yes, look at all these people. And Jesus sends them away. It says Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. Now, I don't know if he told them to go find a solitary place, but that's what he wanted to do because after he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. And later that night, he was there alone. Okay, so he went to find this solitude. He understood the power of solitude. He understood the lesson that solitude teaches. Look at Mark chapter 1, verse 35. We see it again. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up. He left the house. He went off to a solitary place where he prayed. He spent this time with God. Again, let's be reminded, Jesus had a very busy schedule. Jesus had a mission. Jesus had things going on in his life. And yet he understood the importance of backing out of society, backing out of the world, backing out away from his apostles and spending time in solitude. One more. Look at Luke 4:42. At daybreak, Jesus went out to a solitary place. The people were looking for him, and when they came to where he was, they tried to keep him from leaving them. So Jesus is yearning for solitude, and yet he gets found out. Christina, you may go try and find solitude, right? And they find you. No. Right? The kids have found me. That's why you need to, Luke, cut a hole in the wall. No, I'm just kidding. Find a place where they cannot find you, right? And this is really honestly true. There were times whenever I was, you know, working and in ministry and going 100,000 miles an hour, and I would go, I'd tell them, I'd say, hey, I'm gonna take a break. I'll be back. And I would leave, and I wouldn't go out. I would go to my secret hiding place in the building. And I always thought, wow, that would be really unusual if somehow or another I had a heart attack and died. No one would know where I was at. Nobody, I think, Karen, did you even know where I was at? Did I tell you where I was at? It was the coolest thing ever. I loved it. I don't know why Luke would probably think it was really cool. But I cut it out and I put a piece of cardboard over the entire wall and I spray painted it the same color. And then I cut a thing into the cardboard and then hid it behind I don't want to call it a bookcase, but it was kind of a bookcase. And you had to move that out. Nobody knew. You could not know it was there unless you knew it was there. It was the coolest thing ever. It was my favorite thing to do with the teenagers because I could hit on the stairs and hit on the wall and hit on the pipe and yell in the pipe. And they would just freak out, you know, because I'd go, I'm in here. He's in the kitchen. And they'd all run in there. And then I'd knock on the wall. He's in the hall, you know. And they were like, and so they used to say I was in the air ducts. They were like, he found a way to get in the air ducts. He's crawling through the air ducts. He's in the walls. And it was just cool. It was great. We played that game for years. And then, like, say, the church building burned. And I remember when the building burned, I was like, this is so sad. And then some of the kids went, we can't play hide and go seek. Where was the secret hiding place? I mean, the building's burning to the ground, and they're asking me where the secret hiding place is. It's just too funny. So find a place, all right? Find a place of solitude. That's really important. Solitude involves being alone, all right? Stopping all human interaction. That's part of solitude. And then silence. Silence involves stopping all noise. Difficult to stop noise, isn't it? Isn't it funny Craig did the 3 minutes last week? Did y'all remember that? Were y'all here last week? When Craig, 3 minutes. And after about a minute, you could just feel the tension in the room. Like, that is so much silence. You know, it was just awkward. And I was watching him because he had his phone out and he was timing it. And even the 30 seconds you gave us this morning is like, this kind of almost freaks us out when there's silence. But we need silence. Rob Bell, we showed a video 2 Wednesday nights ago. And Rob Bell in that video is talking about noise. It's a video on noise. And he said, he introduced us to a guy by the name of Bernie Krause. And Bernie Krause, for a living, makes nature videos. He records, like, bumblebees' wings or records, you know, hummingbirds, the sound. I mean, he does all these sound things. He said that in 1968, for him to get 1 hour of undisturbed sound, no airplanes, no cars, no noises, just what he was looking for, in 1968, he would have to film for 15 hours to get 1 hour of pure, unfiltered, perfect sound that he was looking for. This video was made in the year 2005, so 11 years ago. And he said, Bernie Krause said for him to get 1 hour in the year 2005, he'd have to film and record 2,000 hours. That's how much noise has infiltrated our lives. We weren't built for noise. We're not designed for constant noise. Jim Elliot in his book said this, I think the devil has made it his business to monopolize on three elements, noise, hurry, and crowds. Satan is quite aware of the power of silence. I love that perspective because I think it's important for us to find silence. It's part of the sanctuary, the solitude. If there's always noise, the question should be, how will I ever hear God speak? And we're not talking necessarily about an audible voice. We're just talking about, you know, you read a passage or you meditate on a passage. When are you going to ever hear God talk to you if you're always going? You know, you don't hear that small, still voice. David wrote in Psalm 62, my soul waits in silence. He says, my soul waits in silence for God only. From Him is my salvation. So you say, oh, well, that was easier for them back then. Yeah, it probably was easier for them to be more silent. But he also did it on purpose. Look at Lamentations chapter 3, verse 25 and 26. We see another passage here The Lord is good to those whose hope is in Him, to the one who seeks Him. It is good to wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. It's good for a man to bear the yoke while he's young. Let him sit alone. Where? Where does he? Oh, in silence. For the Lord has laid it on him. Look at Psalm chapter 4, verse 4. David writes, "Tremble and do not sin. When you're on your beds, search your hearts and be silent." It's within Scripture. Ecclesiastes chapter 3 is an often quoted passage. It's that passage where Solomon is saying to everyone, hey, there's a time for everything under the sun, right? There's a time for everything. We've heard that passage. There's a time for everything, a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to laugh, a time to cry, a time to love, and a time to hate. But he says in verse 7, there's a time to be silent. There's a time to be silent. So there's a time for everything under the sun. And Solomon, if you'll remember, was that wise person. Had all the wisdom in the world. And he tells us, you know, it's important to be silent. Silence is an important part of our life. There's an old Bavarian proverb which reads, I know, Bavaria, whatever. But it says, with silence, one irritates the enemy. You can fill that in a lot of different ways. But I think since our enemy is Satan, and you have several other books, including Scripture that says silence is a tool against Satan. Right? Because he would love for us to be busy. He would love for us to be distracted. It's an easy thing. I was, you know, Zane, Renee wasn't here, wouldn't be able to be here this morning. So I had Zane for class. And so we're talking about stuff. And Zane's, you know, he's moving around. I'm like, oh, Zane, come here. Focus for a second, you know. And so we're talking and we're learning some stuff. And then he gets distracted again. And so we were talking about the parable of finding, you know, the pearl and finding the treasure. And so I hit a rock or he hit it first. And then I found it. It took me like 12 seconds. He's not a good hider, but he's not in here. Oh, is he? Oh, he is in here. Yeah. Zane, that was pretty weak, buddy. I'm telling you. So, but I hid the rock and the funny thing was I hid it under his flip flop. He'd take his flip flops off and laid them in the center. So I just hid it under the flip. He looked all over the room and then he got distracted. And he's, oh, and he found something he had drawn a few years ago. And he found, you know, and I said, whoa, you're looking for something important. You're supposed to be finding it. Oh, yeah. And so after a little bit, he got distracted again and distracted and distracted. And I said, bud, I thought the purpose was to find that. He goes, but it's not worth anything. It's just a rock. And I said, oh, that's right. You know, and I said, guess what? I'm going to be preaching about that this morning, and I'm going to say that to you. Some things we search for, you know, we go, it's not that big of a deal. Why? It's just a rock. It's not important. If it was really a pearl, if it was really a gold nugget, I told him, I said, you'd probably be looking a lot harder. And what was really funny is he kicked his flip-flops over, and he goes, seriously? Seriously? You know, and I went, yeah, it was just right there. You know, I said, but you didn't know. I said, that's kind of like our parable. You know, the merchant was looking for a pearl of great price, but the guy that finds the hidden treasure, he just happened upon it. I said, you were looking and gave up, and then when you kicked your flip-flop, you found. I said, that's the kingdom. But you're not going to find elements of the kingdom in the noise of this world. You're only going to find it in your quiet place, the silence that comes with that. So we have solitude. It involves being alone. Silence involves stopping all noise, and then stillness. Very quickly, stillness. I mean, stopping all activity. Maybe the activity of reading the Scripture or praying to God, but nothing else. That's the activity. Sometimes when we refuse to cease from activity on our own, God makes us stop. Okay? God will make us. One of the most famous psalms, I think everybody knows it, Psalm 23, right? We all get that psalm. Have you ever paid attention, honestly, to the words of the Good Shepherd? Look at what he says in verses 1 through 3. It says, the Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. Look at verse 2. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. You know, he makes me lie down. Maybe he makes us lie down when we don't want to lie down or when we're not willing to lie down because he knows how important it is to lie down. Maybe he puts us in a hospital bed and says, lie down. Right? I don't know if God does that or not. I'm pretty sure. Sometimes he puts us on the outside visiting somebody in a hospital bed and hearing, I've been told, I should have, and this, that, and the other. You know, I listen to some of those things when people say, I've been going 100 miles an hour, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, now you're getting the rest you need, right? Sometimes he removes obstacles that we might use as an excuse for not resting. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's a job. You know, maybe it's, I don't know how God does what he does. But God will make us lie down if we need to lie down. I think the way we get him to not make us lie down is to lie down on our own. To listen, you know, right? Listen to his leading. You know, get beside that green pasture and get beside that quiet water so he can refresh your soul. I'm going to leave you with the Psalm chapter 46, verse 10, right? I think we all know this verse, but it says it very, very clearly. Be still and know that I am God. I love the fact that we're told to be still, but he also says, and know that I am God. It's in that stillness that we recognize God. We recognize the power, right, that he has and the influence that he has. And that's when we're going to recognize him. So how do we find a sanctuary? Easy. Schedule it. That's how you do it. You find a sanctuary by scheduling it. It could be a closet. Matthew chapter 6. Jesus tells them, go into your inner room, go into your closet and pray to your Father who sees in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. So go pray there. And when you fast, go into your room and fast. Don't get all, look at me, I'm fasting. No, no, no. Clean up, look nice, but deal with your Father in secret. When you give, you don't have to show off about giving, just give. Your Father who's in secret, in a secret place, he rewards us for those things, and we'll be able to talk to him in those secret places, and we'll be able to do those kinds of things with him. So it could be a closet. Maybe it's a God cave, right? We got man caves. Why don't we make a God cave? Make a place in our house where we say, this is just going to be where I go, and I'm going to enjoy a time with the Father. A car, scenic overlook, park, a place of solitude with no people, a place of silence with no noise, and a place of stillness with no activity, because God is waiting to hang out with you this morning in all aspects of your life. I love this series, Overcoming Overload. I needed it in my life. I need to be reminded that we need to slow down and think about God on a daily basis. I love communion thoughts, crosstalk, because it's a moment where we stop for a second and we remember what God has done for us. We need to do that daily.